welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss all things Apple, and we've got a great panel to discuss the ins and outs of the week, and it's been an entertaining week, if not massive news week. Joining us to start us off, we've got a new boy. We've got someone who's willing to try coming on this show. Good lad, I'm impressed. Luke Bissell, how you doing, mate?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Now, you're a developer.
I am, yes.
So you're normally working in Unity, you say?
Unity, yes.
Stuff, but iOS development and Mac development is your sideline.
Yeah, it's side hobby, I'd say.
That's cool. That's all right, mate. It's good to have a hobby. That's printable. How long have you been doing development?
iOS development specifically, yeah. Actually only about 9 months now. I was graduated university last year and was trying to work out what to do with my life, as I think a few people have had that experience.
Yeah.
So while looking for a job and kind of working out a more solid plan, I thought I'll teach myself to make iOS apps. And that's where that came from.
No, excellent, mate. Good on you. And you're regretting it?
I mean, with some of the iOS 13 stuff, possibly, but no, it's good. I'm enjoying it. It's good fun.
Excellent, mate. Well, welcome here. You don't have to talk about development here. You just have to talk about Apple, so enjoy.
That's good. Thanks.
Next to him, it's Chuck. Buddy, how's it going? 3 weeks now. You're on a trot, isn't it?
I'm on a run. Doing good, Ewan.
Well,
good. Thanks for having me.
You deserve the time off based on all the crap you had to put in with you. You couldn't come on through the summer.
Yeah, it seemed like it was a crazy summer, but I'm not sure things have calmed down. They've just gotten a little more scheduled and regular.
It's just as big a mess there. You've just walked away from it and thought the hell with it.
I'm not going to say that, no.
Never mind. Welcome, mate, as always. Patrice is coming in from Germany.
Yeah, I made it. Like, I haven't slept much last night, so I hope I'm not...
Have you literally just tired. Have you just like landed or something? Literally 12 hours or something?
Yeah, it's about 24. Like, it has been a day.
That sounded sufficiently spaced out, mate, so sorry.
Yeah. No, it's fine. I just I slept from whatever 9 PM last night till 1 AM and then I was up until whatever 8:30 and then I slept for another couple hours. So it has been a little bit crazy.
Bad luck, buddy. No worries. Are you well though? Yeah.
It's probably just that, like, it's all good.
Are you okay, though?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Excellent, mate. Superb. And joining me in the studio, as ever, the ever frustrated this week. We'll probably start with him. Muller, how you doing, mate?
I'm fine, thank you. Never asked me about my journey here, taking all of 50 minutes.
7 miles.
Yeah. Just saying.
And you've brought your water bottle that you picked last week, but filled with liquid this time, haven't you? So it shows up better when you put the light on.
Yeah, I've been drinking it though, brilliant.
There we go. Slightly orange water. Superb, mate. Yeah, that'll keep a 10-year-old happy.
Certainly keeps me happy.
I know. I think that's what I was saying. The week in Apple, all the stuff that's gone on. Twitter has released a Mac app in the App Store. It's compatible with Catalina, it says, but I've lost my patience with Twitter, so we're not going to talk about that. We are going to talk about the fact that Catalina has dropped this week, and quite a few people in our Slack room have tried to install it, and it hasn't been a good experience. Now, Luke, you said that you fortunately didn't push the button.
Yeah, I was going to do it, and then I saw a lot of people complaining about problems, and I just thought it's not worth it. I'll leave it for a bit, wait for the bugs to be ironed out and some of the apps to be updated to support 64-bit, and then see what happens. But I think it seems like a really interesting update, but it was slightly problematic.
Yeah, no. It's has anyone? So I know Muller has, but he's going to take up most of this show with his rant in a minute. I think when he starts, Chuck, did you install?
Yeah, I've installed it twice, which sounds strange. I installed it once, just a straight install, but to an external hard drive. And that went smooth. So then I migrated my production machine over to that and then installed Catalina on top of Mojave. That took a couple hours. And so far it's a little rough around the edges in certain places. I'm not ready to move my full production environment over simply because Final Cut has, some of the plugins for Final Cut have given warnings.
Yeah, that's what's scary
that,
me.
You know, they're not quite there yet. So I'm testing it. But, you know, other than that, I mean, it's Mac OS. It's got some new features. Sidecar seems to work really, really well. I've had a limited play with it, but you know, it's there.
Yeah, one of the things that really bothers me with the plugins is not so much the fact of, you know, if I lost a plugin and I was making a new film, I wouldn't be that bothered because there'd be something else I could buy that could replace it. Okay, fair enough. What bothers me is when I've made it. So this week I've just rehashed last year's film for Halloween for the local country park. And they said, oh, could you change it because some of the features have changed. And if some of the plugins hadn't worked on that, I'd have been stuck because that would never have come back out. And I did pull an absolute blinder a few years ago when I realized I'd make libraries for each individual film rather than trying to make one that covered all of the films ever that I made. So that gave it a unity. But the problem is now that Final Cut is probably going to start saying, I need to update the library. Mm-hmm. So I could end up with the same problems. And I am scared to death of that.
It's I think it's so important if you're doing serious photo work, serious video work with all those pieces that plug into Final Cut or Lightroom or Adobe or whatever, that you buy that external SSD and maybe clone everything over so that in theory you could boot into your old environment or do what I did, keep my old environment running and be able to boot into the new environment and test things before you commit to it. Yeah. It's just the only way to go because we are seeing such a big transition this time with the 32-bit apps going away.
Is there a problem that you think that you could update the library in the new Final Cut and that would cause the problem enough to break the plugin anyway?
I don't know, Ewan. I mean, I know that Final Cut was doing some conversions earlier. I mean, even during Mojave that said, okay, we need to upgrade some of the libraries. And there were also some medias, some specific types of media that were not going to be supported because the codecs just were 32-bit and nobody was updating the codecs.
Right.
So you really have to go through and make sure that you know what's there and what's proper before you just completely abandon the ability to go and run the older versions.
I mean, there's always a way to run the older version, which is use whatever VirtualBox, Parallels, VMware, like one of the virtual machine providers or applications, and install the older version of the OS and the old old Final Cut version. I think that should still be possible, and that I don't see why. I mean, you can even do the reverse, like install Catalina, install the new Final Cut version there, and just test it with your plugins and see what's working and what's not.
Well, I'm not sure I could lay my hands on an old version of Final Cut because it's direct download from the App Store and it's updated there, so they don't maintain an old version. And you don't actually, it's not like you download a DMG that you then expand. You haven't got that facility, have you? It's all or nothing from the App Store.
That's true. But I mean, personally, I would be less concerned about Final Cut and the plugins. Especially if you're running it on an older OS. Like, I think unless the plugin is not maintained at all anymore, I'm almost certain that would, still work. I think the library conversion is probably less of an issue. It's more what Chuck said, like the 32-bit codecs and all of that, like the whatever that plugin is using, which is still 32-bit, that would cause an issue.
Have you stuck Catalina on, Patrice?
Well, I've had it since almost day one. So yeah, but I'm not doing anything with plugins with Final Cut at all. I'm actually not doing anything with Final Cut right now. So I can't really tell you whether it's working or not.
I'm expecting this answer to generate an awful lot of bleeping. Muller, have you installed Catalina?
I did, yeah. And it went really well. Not.
Oh, mate. So fill us in on your woes.
Well. It took a long time to download. It must have took nearly 2 hours, and after about 3 hours, it burst into life. You had to go through all the different screens, agreeing your life away, giving all your privacy to Apple.
Yeah, but you expect that. That's fine.
Oh, you accept that. And then it kept opening it. Oh, you need to type in your iTunes password. Typed it in. 5 seconds later, you need to type in the password now for the use to open your computer. So I did that. You need your iTunes password now. And then I was constantly on this rigmarole, this never-ending password hell. And after a while, I thought, I'm pretty sure I got my password right. But I went into onto another computer, said I forgot my password and changed it, come back onto the new one, onto this one, under Catalina, changed the password on there, and it went away.
Mm-hmm.
But I then had to go around the house updating all the other, iPads, Apple TVs. Flipping out. So I was venting in the Slack room quite a bit, as you may remember.
Mm-hmm. And I really don't understand why that issue still is in Catalina, because that has been an issue like over multiple betas.
Oh,
like,
really?
It just pops up, and it has been reported. Like, it's not that Apple didn't know about it.
Well, it affected me and Bob, so I wasn't the only one.
Yeah, no, it's not just you. Like, it happened to me, like, I don't know when, like twice at least during the summer.
It just seemed the only way to get out of it was change the password, and then, and then it went away. And in the background, I was doing the Mac Mini, because that's an i5 and it's on a different network. That took a lot longer to update. But when it burst into life, I didn't have the problems I had with this one.
Mm-hmm.
So did you update the Mac Mini after you changed your password?
The Mac Mini was still downloading. So that must have took 5 hours all in all to upgrade to Catalina. Because it that's downloaded.
What I'm saying is you'd had the password issue on your Mac.
Yeah.
So you you changed the password and it stopped that issue. But that was before you did the full install on the Mini.
The Mini was still downloading, and it was sort of black screen.
So then it installed after that, after you changed your password, and when you put your password into the Mini, it didn't give you
me the issue.
Wow, that's interesting. Maybe Apple just forcing you to change your password?
That is the only explanation, possibly. I remember all I've done is it's gone back to an old password I used to use, because I've got one of these people that got about five, and I just...
Now, just for clarity for listeners, your password wasn't 123456, and that's why Apple wanted it constantly changed.
It was a much stronger one. It was up to 9.
Oh, you went to 9. Good lad. If you really want to screw them up, put the 0 in. 2 right. Or go back to 1 and then 0.
No, but it was a frustration. But it didn't happen on the Mac Mini, which was strange, because... I checked beforehand. I used that app that was recommended last week.
The checker one, yeah.
64, yeah. And it just said, it gave the same problems I had with this one, which were only Apple things, which I thought, well, that's going to be what sorted out with Catalina.
So Bob's jumped into your defense, mate. He said his Apple ID is now 20 characters, and he had the same problem, so it's not it.
Yeah.
He's an economist, though, so he can count to 20.
Is that up to 1 to 15? Some of them are double figures, aren't they?
Windrider says, now this is interesting, because Windrider's put in, he did the upgrade and he didn't have any password issues. And he did a nuke and pave. So he cleaned everything off before he started again.
Well, with his Pornhub download, you would have to, wouldn't you?
Yeah, my suspicion is that, like, if it happens when, like, you have an existing system that is locked into iCloud and it upgrades and something gets stuck with the password, I'm kind of curious whether anybody tried just logging out and logging back in, whether that fixed anything.
Oh, right, okay.
I did try that and it didn't work.
Okay.
I just tried everything, and then in the end I thought, I'm just going to change the password.
Yeah.
So was this when you launched iTunes? Because I didn't have any of this. You had the usual things to hoops to jump through to give authorizations.
And then you had to go back into Keychain and log those in. But that's what was given.
See, I don't use Keychain either.
Well, Keychain is pretty good, particularly with this one, with fingertip, with the fingerprint.
No, so you're saying you use Keychain for your passwords?
Yeah.
I don't. So I'm interested to see if Bob uses keychain. I guess he does at 20 characters. I'd be interested to see whether Windrider uses keychain or not, because if they come back with yes and no, then that's perhaps the compounding factor.
Because another thing that I found quite that chugged through as well was photos. When you relaunched the photo app, that must have took about an hour or two to chug through.
Yeah, that's probably rebuilding the indexes though, isn't it?
Yeah, and the email app took a long time before it, you know, finally came to life properly. Other than that, it was no problem.
So, Luke, you installing it then or what?
I think I might hold off for a minute or two. You're not really filling me with confidence here.
I thought about sticking it on my MacBook Pro, and then I thought, no, I'm not going to bother. I might stick it on my MacBook Air just because that doesn't matter so much. But
I mean, it honestly depends a little bit on, like, your personal usage. I mean, for as long as I can remember, as long as I've used Macs, the 0.0 version never has been perfect. There are always bugs and always things that don't work. So it depends really on what you're doing. I mean, if you're like me, like developer/manager, I don't need, like, I mean, as long as like a text editor is working and I can do Git, then I'm good. Like, and like whatever, the browser still works. It's inconvenient, but I can upgrade and I can deal with any issues that come up, and I can even downgrade if I have to. Like, I know how to do that. So it really depends. I mean, I think it's for anybody who doesn't have to do or doesn't really feel the need to do like a day 1.0 update. I would always hold off for like a couple of weeks. Let people figure out what's working, what's not working. Let Apple fix a couple of things, and then like whatever in a month, maybe upgrade then.
Yeah, there's always the pull of the new thing, though. You want the new shiny thing, but sometimes it's definitely best to hold off.
Yes, I mean, there's a reason why I upgraded like day one the beta came out. So
yeah.
So enough of the negatives. What for those of you that have installed Catalina, what are you seeing as the good things now you've got it working?
I do like the fact that iTunes is all split up. I do like that. I mean, that's not the most. And I like Sidecar. I'm actually using it now. Other than that.
Well, I watched you use Sidecar before we started, and it was extremely fluid and slick. It did look really, really good.
Yeah, it's easy.
Sidecar is probably the favorite thing I've stumbled across. I haven't played that much with the music app, so I don't know if that's going to make a big difference for me or not. But it doesn't feel like it looks that much different, at least when you fire it up.
It's really not. I can't remember which apps are basically iTunes clones. I think it's the TV app and then music or something like that. I think podcast is a separate, like a new app. For me, the security features actually the more interesting things, like all the new, like, apps that need to request things and like just everything security wise, like the read only file system for the OS, all of that is for me actually a big benefit. It's just more secure and it feels better.
What about Apple Watch opening your computer as well? Because there's a few people have said that they can't get that to function.
Works for me. Works on the Mac Mini, the Air. The Mac Minis are 2014.
What's the proximity like for that? How close do you have to be?
Bluetooth range.
Oh, that's 10 meters.
Yeah, it's not that far. I mean, it's like I can walk past my Mac and it unlocks sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I know it does it because I suddenly feel a shake on my arm. I set it up on the Mac Mini. I didn't think it would work on there because I thought it would be too old, but no, it does.
Mm-hmm. What's the site? iPads, Christ! What iPads are compatible with Sidecar? Because I know some aren't, are they? And I think Windrider was saying it has to be pencil compatible, new pencil compatible.
Yeah, mine works. Obviously, it's a new one. There was a list somewhere. I'll have to find it.
Bob's saying that he's had no latency at all on his, and he absolutely adores Sidecar. Windrider saying he thinks the music app's working really well and excellent. Bob Beach is unlocking notes without a problem too.
He's unlocking his notes with the Apple Watch, which is also like a great new feature. You can now like authorize things with your Apple Watch.
And if you've installed iPad, iOS for iPad, iPad OS, then your notes are knackered, aren't they, until you install Catalina?
I've definitely experienced that.
Yeah,
as someone who's not on Catalina yet, the notes just look weird. They're not coming out on the Mac nicely at all.
No.
So what else if you've got a Mac that can't upgrade then? So you're basically, your notes are screwed.
Could be.
That's a bit naughty.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was notes. I thought it was reminders that was the challenge.
Reminders doesn't work at all. Like once you upgrade your database, like it asks you to, but once you do that, you cannot access it in anything but the latest versions.
Right.
Yeah. Right. With notes, it's pencil stuff on notes. It's getting like, it's overlaying things on top of each other in incorrect ways on the when displayed on the Mac. So don't know what's going with that.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Now, I was reading a thing the other day that the it actually, you won't, as a user, you won't see it, but actually it creates two separate volumes for an installation of Catalina. You've got your data files and then you've got the system files entirely separately, haven't you?
Yes, that's correct. It's also like you have to...
Go on.
Yeah, you have to, like, you basically have to know that when you're doing backups because you want to, I mean, honestly, it depends on what you're trying to achieve, but you definitely want to get your what's called the data volume now. But it's like, it's a security feature, as I said, like Apple basically separated your data from the system, from the operating system. So, like, you can literally throw that away if you need to. Like you can throw away the OS and just redo it and the data is still there. Plus it's more secure because the OS like volume is read-only.
So normally you won't see access to the system volume, but can you still gain access through terminal or?
Well, you can always access it. It's just read-only. I mean, you haven't been able to modify any system files for, I don't know how long, at least a year, maybe 2 years.
Right.
That's the system integrity protection that kicks in. So it really like a lot of what this is doing was already kind of in place. It's just like clear and more separate now. Like it's fully properly separated. Kind of like, I mean, I don't know who did that, but I always did that back in the day when I had Windows. I would always have my data on it like a separate data partition. Just so that I could just nuke Windows if anything went wrong and could just reinstall it and all my data was still in place.
So Luke and Patrice, particularly speaking as developers, how are you finding Catalyst in terms of getting iPad apps onto? Because there's been a few articles about issues.
Yeah, I was really interested in it when it was first announced. I think there's a huge amount of potential there, not just for making good Mac apps, but also for kind of improving the state of the iPad app ecosystem. The issue seems to be that Apple have really not fully developed this system, and there seem to be a lot of undocumented features and just lacking in some basic functionality that really should be there. So I think the developers that have got apps out seem to have had to struggle through all these challenges just to get a good app. It's not nearly as easy as the just click a button that Apple claimed it was.
That's the thing. Like Apple never actually claimed that it's just click a button. They said like in the best case scenario, like if you went to the developer sessions or watched the in June or watched the videos, they said like best case scenario, if like your app is perfect, it would be a click of a button. But they said that's not where it's, that's not where it ends. Like usually in order to have a really good Mac app, you need to customize it.
Yeah, but they did kind of imply that during the keynote at WWDC that it would be as easy as checking a box, which obviously was never going to be the case, but I think it gave people an incorrect perception of how easy it would be.
Yeah, no, I got the impression it was going to be extremely easy that way, I may not, we may not have the terminology right of click a button, but it felt that way.
Mm. Yeah, I said, like, in the like dedicated sessions, they were very clear that they were like, okay,
yeah,
it's not just a click of a button. You have to do work if you want a good app. I mean, you can do a crappy app with a click of a button. It's probably going to work somehow, but it's not a good Mac app.
No. Where do you see the benefits of being able to port iPad apps that easily then, Luke?
I mean, the iPad app ecosystem currently is thriving slightly more than the Mac ecosystem. Obviously, there's a bigger market there. So people, so being able to bring some really great apps that are available on the iPad over to the Mac could be a great benefit to that. For developers, just if it is easy, relatively easy, it's a quick way to improve, enlarge the target market, which would be really good. And I think because Mac users expect certain functionality that is maybe more high, like more complexity and power for the make more powerful apps, it would force iPad app developers to improve their iPad app, which would be a good thing. I just think they've maybe slightly messed up this initial launch.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. I see like two groups for whom that would be like the catalyst would be helpful. One is like indie developers that might not have the time, the resources, maybe the experience to do like a proper old school Mac app. Especially if you're an indie, you have to prioritize, and the Mac is probably not as big of a platform as the iPad would be. I mean, it also depends on the app a little bit, like how complex is your app? How much like do you have to customize it? I mean, the more work you have to put into Catalyst to make it work, the more likely it is that you would probably just go with a native app. And then it's like, I mean, you saw the apps that are initially or have launched initially, big companies that simply didn't want to invest in the Mac so far, because like Twitter, for example, Twitter just released their Mac app. They didn't have a Twitter app for the Mac. And because, I mean, probably for corporate reasons, for like policy priority reasons, they were just prioritizing where most of their customers are. So the website and then the iOS apps were their priority, and Mac simply wasn't a big enough target, but now they could do it.
Yeah, no.
Some of this reminds me though of the discussions we had when iOS apps first came out, that you know they were all one trick ponies and they were all really simple, and there were a lot of simple apps back then, and it's matured. This is the first time that we've seen this capability moving over. I would like to think that the tools will get better, but also the ideas of what the kind of synergy you can develop between a Mac app and an iOS app or an iPad OS app are going to develop too. So I think we all would like to see it come, you know, pop in fully formed, but it, you know, nothing ever pops out fully formed.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I really hope that Apple do commit to it and don't kind of go, didn't work, we'll just kind of give up on it. Because as I say, there is so much potential from the way I see it for this improving the whole Apple ecosystem, that if they really devote the time and energy to this project, it could be have really good results in the end.
Yeah,
I think they will and they won't, because I mean, they've already announced Swift UI, which is kind of like Catalyst is a step towards Swift UI. I mean, Swift UI is very young and will probably take a couple of years to have an ecosystem or have devices that are capable of like doing Swift UI. Or like have an ecosystem that's big enough of those devices, and also like the technology still has to mature. So it's kind of like there's already a like replacement on the horizon, but Catalyst is still an important step, because like the first step is to get those like iOS apps on the Mac and have the same platform, like have the same code across your devices, and then you can start and say, okay, and now we're like replacing the UI code as well and like making everything Swift UI. So it's kind of a little bit of both. And like it's still to this day, I think, a question, like is Apple going to invest much into Catalyst if they're already working on the next thing?
And I think that's a problem for developers, is that Apple haven't really made it clear what the long-term plan really is, how much how long they're going to be investing in Catalyst for. And if it's not clear, it's hard for a developer to go, actually, yeah, let's invest our effort and our time into this platform. So I'd like them to be a bit clearer on where Catalyst stands, where Swift UI stands, and where native AppKit apps stand.
Yeah, because that's a great point, because there is an investment in time, if nothing else, over this. So they've got to know that where they're going is of value.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, Apple has invested quite a bit of like resources. I mean, if you look at what Catalyst was last year, what it is this year, and I mean, that's not like a developer or two that worked on it. That's probably like a sizable development team, probably like a couple hundred people that worked on that for at least 2-3 maybe more years. So it is an investment that Apple has made. It's just, as you said, like, it's not clear what, like, is it going to last 5 years? Is it going to be gone in two?
Yeah. Apple, this is, I'm really looking forward to the answers on this story. Kuo says, Apple's HR headset, AR headset is due to launch in the second quarter of 2020. So by the middle of the year, we'll have Apple glasses. Discuss.
Rumor.
Well, it is a rumor, obviously. I mean, because they haven't produced them yet, so it's definitely a rumor. But I just don't see this a space that Apple's ready to get into yet. I don't see a benefit for them getting into it.
This is an area that is really interesting to me, because I actually do some work with AR in my day job, and I've spent some time working with the HoloLens, and just the first HoloLens, not the new one that's coming out, but none of the AR headsets that I've tried, they're all incredibly impressive and really cool, but I would never recommend any normal person get one, not just because they're really expensive, just they're not good enough yet. And I don't know what Apple can do to make this a consumer product that people would want yet. And this seems very, very soon, but there does seem to be a lot of evidence that it's coming quite soon.
Oh, really? So you think this could happen?
Yeah, no, I think it seems from what I've been seeing, not just there seems to be a lot of evidence that piling up. I know iOS 13 has got some ARKit libraries in there for rendering stereo AR apps, which of course is something you can't do right now on an iPhone because we've not got stereo screens. So if it's already in the OS, it implies that it's quite soon to be released.
Okay.
Surely they're going to need a partner, though, because, I mean, these glasses are, I mean, you're going to go to an Apple shop and buy a pair of lenses?
No, I think if you need prescription lenses, the mountings are fairly ubiquitous for... I've got my Hoya glasses, which I love. They're fantastic. I think if I wanted to get some lenses by someone else, they're universal enough that I could go and get them made elsewhere, not that I would.
These are Hoya lenses, not glasses.
Mm. Oh, exactly, that's my point. So you've got Hoya lenses in standard prescription glasses. So there has to be a kind of, I'm not going to say it's a unified standard, but there's got to be something that they all know how it works, otherwise they wouldn't be able to do it. So I think the glasses bit in terms of lenses isn't the issue.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think it's kind of obvious, and I also think it's inevitable that we will get to that point where we have AR glasses. I mean, if you think about it, AR today is kind of cumbersome. You have to take your phone and hold it up to the space and like move it around, and it would be much better, much easier to have that like just in your like contacts or glasses or somewhere in your field of view, like no matter where you look. So it's either going to be like it's in whatever your car windows or the shop windows or whatever, or it's going to be, like I said, in your contacts or your glasses. It's just a matter of the time frame. I'm not sure about the 2020 time frame. I think that might be a little bit too early. I think the technology is not there. I mean, we don't know what Apple has been working on the last, like, probably 4, 5, 6 years.
Yeah, well, if we wait until Apple told us, we wouldn't have a podcast, mate.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's like we'll see. I would expect it more to be like 2022, 2023, to be honest. It's just not there.
Just Luke, on the point you were saying there about mate, go ahead.
I was just saying I would agree that I don't think it's going to be this soon. However, I've seen lots of bits and pieces from all over the place suggesting that it's this soon. So that's what's making me think maybe it will be this soon.
The only thing that I've got as a question, Luke, based on your statement, was you said that there is stereoscopic code in the kit. Well, everything that we've seen with an augmented reality is an idea that actually the augmented reality is pasted over one eye or the other. And actually stereoscopic stuff is the thing that's been reserved for stuff like Google Cardboard. Do we expect Apple to come out with a reader where you shove a phone in to the holder to do immersive game experience far more, rather than this being a set of glasses that you wear that, that you know, de-space kind of extra information?
I hope not, because having used a lot of these Samsung Gear VR and Google Cardboard, they work surprisingly well considering it's just a phone strapped to the front of your face, but they're just a hassle. They're you never actually use them beyond the initial novelty because they're a pain. You've got to get your phone out, put it in, the lenses then fog up, and there's all these issues around that form factor. I'd far rather it was a device on its own, which may be powered by the phone, but is independent in the display.
And you're a glasses wearer, same as me, and that's when it gets a real pain in the arse.
Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully they design it with that in mind. But certainly the HoloLens is not the most comfortable thing to wear with glasses on. It puts a lot of pressure on your nose and is...
I'm
do some work.
I'm quite lucky that my prescription hasn't changed an awful lot in the last 10 years, 15 years. So I've got a VR headset thing up here. And I've got a set of glasses that I had from 15 years ago and that I keep just because they actually fit on the inside of the casing. Simple as that.
Mm. I mean, for the VR headsets, there's companies that sell prescription inserts that fit in quite neatly to your headset. So maybe that's a route that Apple could go down.
Yeah, cool. Any thoughts, Chuck, before we move on?
Yeah, just I'm going to take it a different direction, Ewan.
Okay.
I think that, you know, the technical parts of it are interesting. What I'm more interested in is what Apple is going to be able to deliver as far as an AR experience that I'm really going to want and need. What's going to be the killer app here? And I know they will come, but, you know, out of the gate, for this to be a success, they've got to make a lot of people want one. And so what are they going to be able to put in on the inside of that, of those glasses that I'm going to want to see a big part of the time. Mm. Now, gaming, you know, I'm going to set gaming aside because gaming is a whole different animal. But as a mainstream product, I'm not being skeptical of it because I think there's some really interesting possibilities. But do I really need to see my stocks app, you know, right here? And do I need to see my chat, you know, any incoming texts or chats here? You know, what is it that is going to be delivered? That's what I'm really interested in. And how? Is it going to pair with my phone, you know, to deliver different AR experiences? Or are there going to be apps for the glasses? How is it all going to work?
I mean, there were a couple of obvious ones. We can look at Google Glass as an example. I mean, ultimately, it kind of was probably a little bit early. It was like a PR disaster. But all of that aside, if you look at like the use cases for it, navigation was a big one. I think like notifications, I mean, it's kind of like what you do with your Apple Watch. I think it's like the predecessor to that. Notifications, time, Apple could design a whole in-store experience in the Apple Store where you walk around and it detects the phone that is on the table and shows you the information for it, like what the price is, what the specs are, all of that. It could literally do that. Like, you wouldn't even, like, if everybody had those glasses, they wouldn't even need in-store displays. They could literally put the phone on a table and everything else is in your AR headset. Stuff like
that.
Which
would be awesome. I mean, that goes back to the Daniel Suarez D-Space thing that he put in his Daemon book ten plus years ago. That'd be fantastic. I'd love that. And you walk up to someone and it tells you their name, so you don't have to remember it.
Mm-hmm.
We can get even more impersonal.
And you know, that's one of the things that I was thinking about is that particular book. You know, that it never, and obviously, yeah, it's a book, right? So, but how does it recognize the fact that you have the iPhone? I have an iPhone, that I, two iPhones talk and they put up information about each other, you know, and is that enough? And as far as the Apple Store goes, yeah, that's great. But will that happen at your local car dealer? Or will that happen at your local sub shop, you know, that you walk in, you don't need a menu, you can just take a look at the food? Those are just all questions that I have. And I'm as excited about it as anybody, with the possibility of delivering information that's a lot more accessible and a lot more timely. I just am wondering, you know, what it's going to be for all the people that I work with that aren't gearheads or tech people like we are. You know, what is it going to take to get them on board?
Yeah.
One killer feature that I could imagine is a really good telepresence application. Building on some of the stuff they've done with Animojis and stuff, if they could have what's it called, the Face ID sensor, looking at your face and tracking your face in the AR headset, allowing you to share a space or your real space with a virtual person who's realistically proportioned and looks like your friend and is talking like your friend, moving like your friend, and then you can do things like share documents and play apps together. That could be really a really good killer app.
Yeah.
What you're saying there is they developed this with Memoji in mind.
Oh, but maybe Memoji was designed
with this in mind. I just got a picture of a floating Memoji face in the middle of, you know, out in the middle of nowhere talking to you.
But you know what, Ewan, that's not bad. Lucas, no? that's really, because Memoji would be a lot easier to deal with than video. So you can, it requires a lot less data to pass across. So we could, all of us could be here represented by Emoji as, you know, having the conversation.
I get letters every week wishing that. So.
from my experience with some of the VR social stuff, it's really interesting how being in a space with even a cartoon-looking person, even a very unrealistic-looking person, you feel like you're sharing a space with a person, rather than when you video call someone, you don't feel like you're together. If that makes sense. So there's potential there.
Yeah, no.
Definitely. Yeah, I want to piggyback on that. Lucas, I agree with you because I've done a little bit, not even with a headset, but just with the flat screen, and it does change. It feels like the whole dynamic changes. So you're absolutely right.
Hmm. Muller is saying, trying to make a reference to blue pills from The Matrix, I think, whereas Deep Pan thinks he's talking about the blue pill that stops you rolling out of bed. which I got to say is probably more apt. Mac shipments down Q3 amid overall worldwide PC market growth. So the new Macs are not coming out well. Is that a cost issue, do you think, particularly at the higher end?
Is it not a keyboard issue?
Well, they've gone back to scissor now, haven't they? They reckon there's a new scissor one coming out start of next year.
But people are holding off for that rather than buying them currently.
Okay, got you. Yeah, are they, so they're still on the old keyboard style at the moment. They're not.
I believe so. Yeah,
scissors. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think that's totally. It's not the fact that it costs $6,000 for the starting model. No, definitely not.
I think the iPad Pro is biting into their share.
That's a really good point. That's not like you, mate.
I know. Mm. Sorry. I'll reset myself.
so yeah, because the iPad is a lot more computer now than it was. Totally good point.
Yeah. I could do loads on this cheap £300 one.
Yeah.
Which is quite shocking.
You've got the new one that was at the last keynote, and you're loving it, aren't you?
Yes. I mean, for £300, can't complain.
Yeah. What's the storage volume on that?
32. I didn't go massive.
Yeah, that's not. I could do with a bit more than that, but at least it's not 16, I suppose.
The next one's 128, though, isn't it? Is it? Was it? No, it's 128. The next.
Yeah, one. No, they missed the 64 out.
Yeah, but that was an extra £100. But I just didn't really need it.
No. Anyone else got any theories? Max doomed? No.
I mean, it's also the time of the year where a lot of companies look at their like bottom line for the end of the year and like. Not buy as much stuff like our company certainly is.
Hmm. Are you, what are you, just... so what's the policy that you've currently got, Patrice, then? Just expand on that.
Well, I mean, right now, it's like I said, and I've seen that in other companies happening as well, it's cost savings. It's basically, they look at the, like, the revenue for the year and what they predict, and look at the, like, their spending, and then it's like, okay, the numbers have to look good for our investors at the end of the year, and so we're not, like, buying stuff. We're not, like, we're cutting down travel and all of that. It's pretty common in a lot of companies.
And on the back of that as well, I guess, the longevity of the Mac is improving. You know, your Mac is still powerful now from 2014, 2015. It's still doing a good enough job. My 2015 MacBook Pro, I've got no reason whatsoever to change it yet. It runs Final Cut brilliantly.
I did the majority of my iOS development on a 2012 Retina MacBook Pro, and it was still, until very recently, handling okay.
Good. Excellent. Chuck, you were making a point.
I cut you off, sorry, man. Wondering about, is the iPad Pro due for an upgrade? I mean, that we, on the higher end, we seem to be very dissatisfied with the high, with the market seems to be dissatisfied with the speed of upgrades, updates and upgrades. And so I just wonder if people feel like, okay, some of those are getting a little long in the tooth. You know, we all know the websites out there that have the predictors that the models last this long, and this is when Apple will release a new one, and whether people are paying that much attention to it and figuring they just will wait it out till the next version or next upgrade.
You think? That's just it?
Don't know.
We'll see. We will expect a massive surge in sales then if it's the keyboard, Luke.
Once they're proliferated along the whole product line, I reckon there will be a decent uptick, but that's just a complete and utter guess.
That's all right, mate. I agree. Last story, because I'm interested in finding the actuality of this one for my own benefit. Apple adds Microsoft Xbox Wireless Controller to its online store. Now, I know there's talk about the fact that the Xbox Wireless Controller works with the Apple TV for gaming on an arcade. But I got a and I think it was you, Patrice, that said this. You can't just use a standard Xbox controller. It's got to be from the Xbox One, the Plus, or the new one, the Slim.
Yeah, it has to be, I think, either Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. I can't remember, but it has to be wireless. Like, a wired controller is not going to work. And there are certain, I'm not into gaming consoles, so don't ask me, but there are, like, only certain devices will work.
Right, okay.
Same for PlayStation. Like, it's the same thing.
Because I haven't connected mine, because I thought it was an original Xbox One, and I thought it was the new Xbox One controllers were the only ones that would fit, so... I'll give it a go then, because I've seen reports where people have said they've tried to get their PS4 controller or their Xbox One controller to work on it, and it wouldn't. So I'd love to try that, because that'd be awesome. There's some great games on there. I've really enjoyed Arcade, I have to say. It's been the best $4.99 I've spent this month.
Yeah, Bob Beach is saying PS4 controller works fine with everything.
Yeah, and we got a surfeit of PS4 controllers, because Ellis is an absolute hound with them, so... He gets money and he just wants, what can you do? I want a new PS4 controller, Dad. Well, what's wrong with the old one? It's fine, but I just want a new one that's got this, and I want one in red. And you're like, okay, son, who's paying for that? And he goes, I'll pay for it. Like, Christ, you've got more disposable income than me. You're unemployed, 16 years old. Where are you getting all this from? I don't think it's my wallet. I don't think he's stealing it, so. Oh, well. This podcast and all the others that we do on the network, like the Crack at the Rootless, the Daily Tech News show that comes out every day from Kyle in the Philippines, and the big show that's coming up at 8 o'clock, all supported by TSO Host. We are indebted to them. They saved our bacon last year and picked up all of our bandwidth costs and server costs, and we love them. And we need you to love them too. A lot of you have been doing this, and it's absolutely brilliant. Get yourself out onto social media and all the platforms. Just say thanks at TSO Host for supporting At British Tech. They just want brand recognition. They're not looking for massive amounts of sales from you guys anyway, although they are getting quite a few, which is nice. But they just want the brand recognition. Go out on the socials and just say that simple phrase. Stick it in a note. You can cut and paste it in every week. It takes no time at all. And we will get continued sponsorship from them because they love us. They've got a big push on virtual private servers at the moment. You can get the base model for £40, going up to a holy hell server, which is £220, I think, a month, but is just unbelievably large and fast and hairy. So check out those servers. If you're looking for it, go for them. If you want hosting, still do it. And if you want domains, you can still get it there. Use the offer code BTN20 and you get 20% off your basket. So if you're talking about something at £200, that's an awful lot of money over the course of a year. And it will be across the whole year. It won't be just, and you can repeat it as well. So if you're a returning customer and you're renewing a service, you'll still get 20% as a BTN listener. It's not only for new customers. So check them out because we love them to bits. Right. Now, I'm not going to start with Luke because I didn't tell him about this bit.
No.
Well, I kind of did, but I kind of didn't. We do a cool thing, mate. So it's the something that you've got, which is Apple related in any way, even tenuously, that you just say, okay, I found this. This is brilliant. Use this. It can be a game. It can be anything you like. So we'll come back to you at the end, mate. I'm going to start us off with Chuck. Chuck, have you got a cool thing?
I do. I do. And you'll appreciate this one. This is an iOS app. I'll put it in the chat room called Hole 19. This is a golf app. And what is really great about this, first of all, is it can do a lot of different things. It can keep your scores for you, help you find tee times and all that kind of thing. But where it really shines for me is that it's a yardage app. So it has a GPS mode that you tell it what course you're playing. And I mean, there are courses everywhere. And it, all you have to do is pick the hole. And it will let you know where you are and give you yardage to hazards, give you yardage to the green, all of that. But where it really shines is it's got a companion watch app so that I don't even have to pull my phone out unless I'm really interested in how far it is to the lake in front of the green. If I just want here to the green, I can just pull my watch arm up and look and say, okay, I've got 165 yards to go. So it's at that level, it's free. Now there are enhanced modes that'll let you keep sophisticated scores and, you know, do some stat analysis for you so that you can improve your game. But as far as I'm concerned, the GPS and the watch part are the two killer aspects of this. And especially when it's free. I've compared it like with some of the Garmin rangefinders and all, and I find it to be very, very accurate. I've also compared it to some of the actual measured yardages on courses and really, really like this. So this is one that if you are a golfer, you really need to take a good hard look at this.
I've got a Sky Caddy, and I like using that as well. But it was interesting. I played with a friend a couple of weeks ago. And we played Moseley Golf Club around here, and it's an old golf course. It's probably going back to the turn of the last century. And the way it's designed and laid out, they've really deceived the eye. So you stand over your shot, and you're looking at a bunker, and you go, okay, I think that's round by the side of the green. And actually, you don't realize it's 80 yards short of the green. So in your perception of distance, you're like, I'm going to hit 7-iron. And you hit 7-iron and you dump straight in the sand. And actually, you've still got another 80 yards to go out of the sand into the green. It's an absolutely brilliant course. But I found actually that using the Sky Caddy, I really relished looking at how that was deceiving me. But I never pulled the wrong club because the Sky Caddy just said, right, it's not. It's another 80 yards to the green. You need to hit a 5-iron or a 4-iron. And that was a bit sad, really. But I'd rather do that than hit an 80-yard bunker shot.
Well, yeah, exactly. But that's it. You know, I mean, sometimes I think you can rely on these crutches a little too much. But yeah, if you're trying to play competitively and if they're allowed in the competition, some kind of rangefinder is phenomenal. And this one's not obnoxious because it's tracking you constantly at any given moment. So with the watch, I can just, flip my wrist and say, okay, I know exactly where I am and what I need to hit.
Do your screen stay on, or do you need to open your iPhone and then it goes off again with this?
You and I'll be honest with you. I haven't used the iPhone part of it that much. I don't know. The watch stays on for me. Well, yeah, I've got the 5, but the watch stays on. So it's just, and I can't stress it enough, free.
Yep,
you can pay for the extra things, but you've got the GPS for free.
Yeah, no, excellent. Good pick like that. I'll be downloading that, no question at all. Patrice, what have you got for us, mate?
Now I forgot what I wanted to pick.
Okay, we'll come, that's all right. We'll come back to you.
Oh, so, yes, I know. I got it. I got it. I wanted to pick Eero and my Eero system. So I recently, since I moved out of the house, I moved my Eero system over to like my mother-in-law's. And it is like, it just reminded me how good it is. Like, it was like seamless. I plugged, like I unplugged everything, plugged it in, and that was it. Like, I removed, like, since I split up the system, like part of it I shipped and part of it I left basically one hub there. It was literally like I went in, I saw, oh, there are three Eero devices. I, like, the two that were offline, I removed from the account. That was it. And it's just like, it's a really, really good Wi-Fi router. And I've heard that they're coming to Europe. So keep your eye out for that. If you're in the US, Canada, and I don't know what other countries they're in, definitely highly recommend it. And for Europe, it's just a really good system. Like, the app is awesome. Even subscribe to the what's it called now, Eero Secure Plus, I think, which like gives you advanced security, ad blocking, like a couple of other things. It also includes 1Password and a VPN provider, which I'm using and have been using for years anyway. So it's just a really, really good solution, and it's not too expensive. So Eero, Eero.com, I think.
Okay.
If you're interested.
Brilliant. Thank you. Good one. Muller, what have you got for us?
I put the link in already. Seen it?
Yeah, it's on.
It's a Cloud Mounter. And if you got set up, it's Booksy. When I upgraded the Air, I wanted to connect Dropbox to get some files. And I just thought to myself, I wonder if there's an app for that in, you know. And there was. So I downloaded it. It was very easy to set up. I managed to connect my Outlook and G Drive as well. And it supports about 12 different boxes. And it's just one app. And it mounts like a drive. So your Mac just sees it as a drive. So
cool. Cost?
Set app nil. I've got the...
Oh, it's in setup?
It's in setup.
Oh, that's even better then. We love setup.
It's nil point in setup. I'll have a quick look how much is on the website, but I don't suppose it's that expensive. You get 50 pence off at the moment.
Whoop.
but anyway, it's in setup if you've got setup, which most people do.
Superb. Anyway. No, like that.
It's $44. I just saw the flash by.
Good pick, mate. Thank you.
No, it's not. It's 12 pence, 24.
Okay. Luke, have you got a cool thing for us?
Yeah, I think I've got something. I'll just post it in the chat. So I really enjoy a barbecue on a nice summer's evening. And so this is a barbecue / fire pit called the BioLite Fire Pit that has a big battery and fan on the end. And what this does is it fans your fire and means it actually burns well, so you get very little smoke. And it means it's really easy to light. And the Apple connection here is you can control this all from an app. So you can turn your barbecue up and down from an app, from a distance, which is a lot of fun. And it's revolutionized my barbecuing. So I really recommend it.
Has it made you a better barbecuer?
I'd like to think I was always a good one, but it's definitely made my life easier.
Mate, we've got Chris Ashley on the big show tonight. He is going to absolutely freak if we put in this link in. He's into he does his broiling and meats and all that kind of stuff and cookouts at the football when he goes there. So he's going to love this.
Yeah. What's also really good is you can, once you're done with your barbecuing, you can take the grill off and unhook it down and put some wood on there and turn it into a fire pit. And because it's a mesh, you can see down the side and it looks really cool. Yeah, it's nice.
So this is burning proper fuels. It's not just an outdoor cooker like the gas.
No, no, it's charcoal and wood.
Yeah, proper man. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, a real barbecue.
I can't be doing with the cooker in the kitchen from the kitchen out in the.
No, what's the point?
Exactly. You can come back on again, mate. Bloody brilliant. Okay, £219.95 if you want the basic fire pit. And you
I think you can definitely get it cheaper on Amazon because I don't think I spent that much on it.
All right. That could be a bad choice by you, mate, because I could be down a few quid by the end of tonight.
Oh, you definitely will be.
And the wife is going to go mental. Jesus. What have you done, mate? My cool thing is now I'm a first team manager at my local rugby club, and I spent last year trying to do all the stats for the side. So I was sitting there with a great big sheet of paper that was divided up into what I thought I wanted to try and track. And I'm sitting there making tallies on it and going like an absolute maniac trying to make this thing work and losing track of the game with three stopwatches running to do territory, possession and that kind of stuff. And then the overall time to check that for yellow cards going back on and that kind of thing. I thought there's got to be an application. So at the start of this season, I thought, right, I'm definitely doing it. I'm going back on. And I typed in rugby stats and I got a fantastic surprise because I got an application that is called Breakdown. And it is from some bloke named Luke Bissell. He's going to help me out and tell me how he developed it. But it is a fantastic app. We've had loads of success with it. And it basically, you just type in the details of the match that you're watching. You give colours to the side. So it's very ergonomic in terms of the way that you pick what to do. And it just gives you, it cues you with, right, okay, what are you doing now? I'm doing this. What happened here? It did that. Okay, who was it to? It was this. Okay, what was the result? Did they kick for touch? Did they go for the post? Did they? It was this. And it just simply records everything. So here's some of the matches that we've had with my team. There's the result of Telford Hornets this weekend, 51-0. Did really well. Will Mitchell, who does all the kicking, wasn't so hot. He missed. He only had 3 out of 9. There's one from a few weeks ago against Willenhall away. And there's a breakdown of why we had penalties and what the causes of those penalties were and when they occurred. It also tracks your yellow cards, so you can see accurately when the player's due back on as well. Try scored, there you go, the scoring patterns. We were quite lucky that we've noticed that we actually score fairly evenly, so there's no great sways where we have a dominant period and then do nothing. Amounts of penalties conceded, knock-ons, mauls, that kind of stuff. It's just a great app. It's really, really well done. And I've spent a bit of time talking to Luke on Twitter about it. There's a few things that are just kind of like, did you think about that? Because that came up in a game. And he's like, well, that never came up in the game that we were testing it with. But, mate, you've done a great job here, mate. This is a fantastic app. What sort of drove you to do it?
Thanks. Yeah, so, I mean, I had a very similar experience 5-6 years ago, as you were describing there, sitting on the side of a rugby pitch trying to record apps, trying to record stats and ticking it away, and at the end of the match, after a load of effort, we got the most useless stats. And then I was thinking about this and thinking, there's got to be a better way. Searching the App Store, nothing. And I thought, you know what? There's a limited number of things that can happen at any point in a match. You can probably, as long as you're tracking, you know what's happened up to this point, you can see the possible outcomes of the next phase of the match. So I bet you can make a really relatively simple user interface to record all this. And I had this idea about 5 or 6 years ago and then didn't do anything about it until 9 months ago or something, when I decided to teach myself to develop iOS apps. And it's like, this is the obvious one to try and make. So that's how the idea came about, really. But I'm glad after me theorizing that it'd be useful to people, for it to hear it's actually useful to you, it's really good.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're going to, I do some of the social media stuff for my team. So now we've done this, I'm going to point them to this podcast and then I'm going to put the link in for the app as well, because the pricing's really good. I mean, is it $2.99 a month or £20?
Yeah, it's $27 a year or $2.99 a month.
Yeah, but it is a really valuable tool. We've used it. We've had a few chats about a few things that probably could do with a tweak. But then you said there's a roadmap for feature enhancement as well, isn't there?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I don't want to promise too much here, but a feature I'm trying to work away at slowly is, because you said you did the social media, is the ability to live tweet the match from within the app. So that could be interesting as well.
That'd
in the future.
Really cool. Yeah, we try and put scores out and scorers and that kind of stuff on Twitter, but that tends to go by the board. And even with your app, I'm still doing stuff like a mad freak because, it doesn't do or keep the time overall. So, but great pick, mate. It is called Breakdown. And if you type in Breakdown App Rugby in Google, you'll take you straight to it for iOS. Great pick, mate. It's a great pick from me, actually. Yeah,
great pick. Yeah, I approve that.
Where can we get a hold of you then, Luke?
So you can follow me on Twitter at Luke L. Bissell. And then, of course, you can find Breakdown on the App Store, and that's pretty much it.
Excellent, mate. You've done great today, mate. Do you want to come back on again?
I'd love to, yeah. It'd be great.
Brilliant. We'll have you on regularly, pal. Chuck, where would you be?
You and I'm over at MacVoices.com. That's where you can find everything. We roll out great interviews every week, and also at my Star Trek podcast called Trek Favorites at TrekFavorites.com.
I'm still looking forward to that. We've got to get that done.
I want you on.
I'm in there. I'm in. Patrice, where would you be? Apart from Germany and Austria.
Every week here. Yeah, every week here in the Mac Show, and everything I do on the Patrice.
Yep, your porn went into a heavy download session there, mate, so that's a bit stuttery, but at the Patrice.com.
Oh, shit. Every week. Where was he last week?
I was here last week.
Oh, yeah.
Were you in Germany last week?
No, I was in Phoenix last week, and you did both Mac and Big Show.
You did both. Do you want to come back on Big this afternoon?
Yeah.
Cool, right, see you then later. 8 p.m. Don't get the time wrong, eh?
Okay, 8 p.m.
Yeah.
8 p.m. your time, so...
At least you weren't back in Germany and already 7 hours too early.
Yeah, it's true.
And Muller, where are you, buddy?
Sitting here, mate.
Thanks.
Sorry. Okay, Muller Biker on Twitter, in the Slack room, and on Instagram and stuff as well.
Excellent, buddy. My name's Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow me on 12 Space Media on Instagram if you want to as well. And you can follow British Tech Network on British Tech 2. We're going to be back again. Don't forget the news show. That's on every single day. You can download that from our servers. 5 minutes of the top tech news from Carl Swagger. That's the bloke. He's only been doing it for 7 years out in the Philippines. And we'll have a great time. Back for Big Show at 8 p.m. Back for Mac Show next week. Have a great weekend. And thank you for listening.